THY crew, are you looking to discover your hidden why? Then take me up on this opportunity. It's a one-on-one complimentary coaching call valued at $250 where we chat and define your hidden why and the action steps that you can take to help living towards the life you truly desire. Guys, there's a limited amount of spaces available. What you can do is jump onto thehiddenwhy.com, go to the coaching tab, press the link, and then schedule a time that suits you. Would love to chat with you soon. This is episode 224 on the Hidden Why podcast with Sam Alabrando.
You're listening to The Hidden Why with your host, Lee.
Dharma. I looked up Dharma one time and I found so many different definitions that I had the freedom to make it whatever I want. But for me, Dharma means design. Who did God or the universe make me to be? And if I, to the degree I can approximate that authentically, then that's to me is success. So it's doing me well is my idea of success.
G'day gang, how the heck are you? Lee Manuzzi, The Hidden Why podcast. I hope you're well in whatever you're doing. Guys, here at The Hidden Why, we're all about inspiring others to live life with more passion and purpose and really inspiring others to just unlock themselves from the chains of conformity and start living a life that you'd really, truly desire. One that's without regrets, one that's just in line with your values and your purpose and really just sparking that life up and living life more fully and freely. That's what it's all about. That's what I'm learning and that's what I'm doing. And I hope to share and inspire other people to do the same as well. Guys, today I had a fantastic conversation to bring you with Sam Alabrando, and it was just very off the cuff, like all my conversations. It's not rehearsed. I don't really do much planning. I just like to get into conversation and really just become curious about their expertness, I suppose, and find out how they can assist me and in the process assist you to living this life more truly to our authentic self. Sam was an amazing chat. I really enjoyed it. We talked about, and this is probably the takeout for me among many of the others, but talked about the Yellow Brick Road. He wrote this book and he's got another book as well there, which certainly I think you need to have a look at, which actually stems from the Yellow Brick Road. It's the three dimensions of our emotions, which he talks about, power, heart, and mindfulness. But he then talks about Yellow Brick Road and how that just relates to the personal journey that we all go on and how we can all have that opportunity to really go on this journey and create this life that's more fulfilled and more free and one with more happiness if only we choose it. And we just talk about the Yellow Brick Road and how that was written and how it sort of relates to this personal journey that we all go on. I actually was inspired to grab the movie, which I did, and watch it with my daughter. I'll have to watch it again because I didn't have my full attention there the whole time. But man, what an insightful chat and really, really cool analogy on life and how we should approach it. Very inspirational, guys. There's some nuggets of gold in here too to take away. Some tools for your belt so you can incorporate that into your own life as well. Guys, I'll just let you dive into the show. So enjoy it. Leave me your comments at thehiddenwhy.com. I would love to hear your thoughts on it all. And obviously thank Sam for coming on the show as well. I'll put all his links in the show notes there as well. If you do love this show, guys, or any of the other ones, perhaps the best gift you can give me is just to be able to share it on your network. So Facebook, Twitter, there's all the links there. So just share it out and tell your crew what you loved about it and, yeah, spread the word. It was a really cool interview, really cool discussion, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it as well. So enjoy this chat with Sam Alabrando.
This is The Hidden Why, discussing ideas and thoughts on living life with passion and finding your hidden why, your reason, your purpose.
G'day ladies and gentlemen and welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. My name's Lee Martinuzzi and I'm pumped and excited. Today I have a guest, Sam Alabrando. How are you, Sam?
I'm well, thanks.
Now, Sam, you are an organizational consultant, psychotherapist, author, workshop facilitator, collaborative meditator and executive coach. You've got quite a variety of things that you're doing. You must be a very busy man.
I'm tired even hearing that, yes.
Yeah, there's a lot in that. Now, give us a bit of context or maybe put more simply, what do you do exactly, Sam?
Well, my training is as a psychologist.
Okay.
So, and I apply that psychology to all the things you just mentioned. So I was trained as a therapist initially, and then one part of my internship, and then eventually my postdoc, I ran an outpatient clinics out here in Pasadena, California, for a university out here. And I found when I was doing that, the thing I really enjoyed was thinking about leadership and teamwork and such. So I concurrently, through my career, have worked with clinical clients, but have also done organizational consulting. And out of that, you often will do workshops, which I find to be something that I enjoy doing quite a bit. Because of my personality, I like that kind of engagement. I love teaching. It's part of who I am.
Yeah.
So that's why you got that list there. And then the one mediator piece was particular to people going through divorces. Right. Because those times can be very, very difficult and very painful. And people can be at their worst or their best, mostly their worst during a divorce.
Hmm.
And so I found it meaningful to help people go through that very difficult process and help them through that Oz, as I might say, have them go through that difficult place.
So you work in the group environments as the workshop facilitator?
Yes.
Which I assume is quite enjoyable. I could see myself enjoying something like that. But then you also work with people one-on-one in that divorce situation, or is that more sort of collaboratively with both couples?
The piece we did with that was working together collaboratively with lawyers. So the mental health professionals would work collaboratively with lawyers.
Oh, okay.
But within the organizational piece, I also do executive coaching. In fact, I teach executive coaching at a grad school out here in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. Very, very cool stuff. Very interesting. What you've been doing it for some time now, 35 years, is that right?
Oh, come on. Now you're meddling.
Hey?
That dates me, doesn't it? I started when I was 10. So
that dates you. It's good to be dated. So, yeah. You've been practicing it for quite a while anyway, so and loving it.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. You know, it's really a fortunate thing. I consider myself very fortunate for anyone, you know, talking about passion and happiness.
Mm.
When you can find something that matches who you are, and it's really quite a nice thing. So I'm very, very fortunate that way.
Yeah. And you know, people do. People find their passion, you know, as young as 10 years old, Sam. And quite fortunate to jump in that field. For a lot of us, we don't. And, you know, my personal story, which is what I share often in the show, is, you know, I just jumped into life like everyone else does and followed the path that I thought I had to and found myself in a place that was good. You know, I had everything I could want, I guess, but wasn't quite fulfilled. And then sort of went off that track and started walking my own path. And in that journey, found more freedom, fulfillment and happiness. Mm-hmm. And you know, and that's the thing. Like I talk to a lot of people on the show, and some of the people I talk to are 40 or 50, and they've just had this major change and walking, you know, a new path that's more aligned to the path that's, you know, true to themselves. So yeah, good for you to find it early. Is there any sort of link there, like why you jumped into that field early on? Is there a link to your childhood that sort of just made it make sense, or?
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not sure if I found it early. I think I found it along the way.
Along the way.
I grew as a person. I found my niche more and more. So, as a young boy, I had my sights set as a. You could tell from my last name, I come from an Italian heritage, and I was set to be a priest. Until puberty hit, and then I changed my mind and decided to work with people in some form or fashion. But that's where the path was wide, and then it narrowed along the way. So, kind of almost like the next step took me in the direction I needed to go. So,
okay. So as a boy, you sort of enjoyed, you know, working with people.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I've always been. I was one of those kids that didn't get very many dates, but all the girls would come to me and talk to me about the dates they were getting. I was the one that everyone came to talk to. So it was destiny, I suppose.
That's tough.
It got better.
At least you're talking to girls.
Exactly. I appreciate your empathy. That's one of the three dimensions. So there you go.
Okay. Well, let's. I want to talk about the journey first of all, because you have the book called The Yellow Brick Road, which I'll be honest, I haven't read, but have read the outtake on, and certainly sounds like something that would be quite of interest to the audience. So tell us about The Yellow Brick Road and what it's all about.
Sure. Happily. The book started first by the model that I've been working on for about 35 years. When I was in grad school, my first grad school experience, I was introduced to the work of a woman named Karen Horney, and her book is called Our Inner Conflicts, which was written back in the 50s and is still in print today. So it's a testimony to her work. And in it, she says, when we get conflicted, we do one of three things. We move one of three ways. We either move against people, we move toward people, or we move away from people. And I found that description of how we move very compelling and very interesting. And so I started working with that idea as a young therapist with my clients. And as I began to do workshops, I would bring it in different ways. And then when I went to my doctoral program out here in California, I came across the work of a man named Wilford Bion. Wilford Bion is probably one of the greatest psychoanalytic minds of the 20th century. And hardly anyone's ever heard of him, including most therapists and psychologists. But he said
something. What's his name again, Sam?
Wilford Bion, B-I-O-N. Yeah, he's from England. Yeah. But grew up in India and had that kind of influence, I gather. Mm-hmm. And he said there's one of three ways we link or connect to other people. We either connect to others through what he called hate or love or through knowing. And I said, I know somebody else who has three things. Wait a minute. Hate is very similar to moving against, which is Karen Horney's term. And love is certainly similar to moving toward. And in order to know something, you have to move away. And that was the birth at that point of what I called the interpersonal triangle.
Okay.
And I said, that's two people independent of each other came up with asking a different question, came up with the same three things. And I found that really interesting. And I built a whole model around this thing I call the interpersonal triangle.
Yeah.
And later becomes the three dimensions of the interpersonal world, which is the second book. But all this to say, I would work with this, I'd play with it, and then I would present it at workshops. And there was one day when I realized, isn't that something? Dorothy's three companions from The Wizard of Oz actually represent each of the movements. Lion, who wanted to be king of the forest, is the power or the moving against. The Tin Man, who wanted a heart, and I believe if Frank Baum wrote the book today, Tin Man would have been a tin woman because it's the feminine side, right, of all of us, not just women but men too. But he wanted a heart, and I go, that's moving toward or love. And then Scarecrow wanted a brain. That's the knowing. That's beyond knowing. And so I said, isn't that interesting? And I began to think of it as Dorothy's journey was the journey of her going into this place, and she had her one of her tasks in this journey was to integrate those three parts of herself.
Mm.
So I mentioned that one time in passing in a workshop, and I usually get a couple people come up after I talk and ask a few questions. That day there was a line of people, and all they wanted to talk about was The Wizard of Oz.
And there was makes me want to go out and watch it.
There was someone in the audience who was he was from the USC, the school here, and a consultant. And he says, you need to write a paper on it. And so I remember I was flying to New York thinking about this paper. And by the time I landed, I had a whole book in my head. And I said, what else about The Wizard of Oz? OK, so one piece was Dorothy as a young girl becoming a woman. She had to integrate those three parts of herself. And it's interesting enough, when we find them in their – originally when we find them, they're all in their negative position. Each one could be negative or positive. So here we have Lion, who's this nasty brute, bully. And by the end of the story, he found courage. And we have Tin Man, who was immobilized. Those of us who are codependent or have a tendency to be codependent, we get immobilized. He was frozen. And by the end of the story, he's very compassionate. He's the one that kind of, said, let's keep going. And he's the one that was doing it. We were doing this for Dorothy, right? And then Scarecrow was detached in this cornfield and wanted a brain. And by the end, he was the one who was doing all the knowing and the thinking. So Dorothy, by the end of her journey, was successful in bringing those three parts of herself together in a positive way. So I said, what else about the Wizard of Oz? Well, we don't – as adults, we don't change readily. And I knew as a therapist already that most people don't change until something happens to them. I said, that's like Dorothy. We don't change in Kansas. We change in Oz. There's an old idea with the old psychoanalyst. They said you have to make things – in order for a person to change, they have to be – there has to be disequilibrium. They have to be tilted. And I said, well, that's what Oz is. So in order for Dorothy to do her journey, she had to go from a place that she was familiar with to a place where she wasn't familiar. And then another principle was that we have to face our witches. Those are the scary parts of ourselves that we don't want to face. And as long as we don't face them, they just get bigger and meaner. But when we finally do turn around and face them and we throw water on them, which I call consciousness, when we bring consciousness to the things that scare us and we face them, they melt. And then the other one that I'm particularly fond of is the idea that we all have wizards in our heads. We have all these ideas of things that are going to make us happy and fulfill us. If my wife or my husband was only more like this, or if I had more money, if I only blah, 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 all the if onlys, and those are our wizards. Anybody who's addicted, that whatever they're addicted to is what their wizard. So for an alcoholic, Jack Daniels is their wizard. And if you're a sex addict, masturbation or prostitutes are your wizard. These are the things we think are going to make us fulfilled or happy. And where, in fact, Dorothy had – and it was Toto who pulled back the curtain and showed her that the wizard was just a fraud. And all of our wizards are frauds. And Dorothy had to do the journey herself. And that's what fulfills us. So that was one of the other principles. And the last principles, as much as we have to do the journey on our own, we can't do it alone. We need resources. So Dorothy needed the community of Munchkins. And she needed Glinda, the good witch, who I call our mentors. And Toto's our best friends. And I refer to the slippers, or I guess they're ruby – I guess they're slippers in the book. I get them confused. One of them shoes, one of them slippers. As long as she wore them, she was protected, and I call that our spirituality. So this is all going through my head.
Wow. Flying. That's really in depth.
It must have happened over Kansas. So there you go. See, the book came together right over Kansas. But that's the kind of the flow of the book. It's about the journeys. If we're going to take journeys. And it's very interesting that that Joseph Campbell, who is known as a very, very well-known mythologist, he refers to the Wizard of Oz as one of the best examples of the hero's journey.
Listening to that book, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so you're in one place, and then the hero's journey, you always have to go somewhere else, and you have to face certain tasks and challenges to get through. That's what life is, isn't it? And when at the other end, we get better Kansases at the other end.
Wow. So. Some pretty cool thought going on there, and how it all relates to that movie.
I didn't give you much of a chance to talk there, did I?
I don't need to talk with that sort of thought. That's awesome. There's plenty of talk in my head going at the moment. So I really enjoy it. What sort of stands out for me is that that sort of need that we need for this journey, you know, for that experience to really open up and be had by each one of us individually. If I
might interject there, because that's a really interesting and good point. I often compared the book, Frank Baum's book, with the 1945, I think, movie. Or 39, I'm sorry, 1939 movie. And in this way, in the book, Dorothy was actually she was thrown into Oz by the tornado, and in the movie she wanted to go over the rainbow. And we take journeys for different. Some of us take journeys because we choose to, and some of us take journeys because we get thrown into situations and we're going to sink or swim.
Right. Okay. So there's that force or that choice.
Yes. Yes. And anyone who gets thrown into it always has the choice of not doing the journey.
Hmm.
They can drink, or they can complain, or all the stuff we do to avoid what I call take exits out of Oz.
Okay. Are they the wizards? Are they different from the wizards that you sort of referred to?
That it's interesting that you said that, because because Dorothy was going to use the wizard to get out of Oz, right?
Yeah.
I think I wish I knew that. I would have put that in the book. Yes. So, yes, I believe.
Because I think a lot of us, you know, choose to escape reality through those wizards, and that's by drinking or taking drugs or, you know, whatever you might do.
Yeah.
I think TV is a good reason to escape reality.
Yep.
Wow, interesting stuff. What, I mean, yeah, that path by choice or by force, I guess, can happen to you. Do you think it happens to everyone, or do people just move through life and never get that sort of, I mean, I think we all face with that opportunity, but perhaps just don't realize it or certainly don't have that, yeah, I guess don't realize it to actually go onto it. You know, I can relate an experience in my life where it was sort of by force that it happened, and it put me on this path. And that was a, you know, transformational path that was sort of like this journey where I'm now, you know, been able to face you know, my negative side, my fears, things like that, and sort of figure things out and just work through that process. And in that process, there's been that sort of fulfillment for me. There's been that happiness and that sense of freedom. Is that the same for everyone? Does everyone get this opportunity in your experience, or is it only for some of us that are fortunate enough to be pushed into it?
Great question. I think the answer is yes. The thing that comes to my mind, I remember working with this woman, and she told me a story about her mother. Her father, her mother, the father died. Her husband died. The next day, she called Goodwill. They came that day. They picked up all his stuff, and she never talked about her husband again for 2 years.
Wow.
All right. Now, you could say she's a very stable person, and people in the community would have said that. It was a very highly noticeable professional. And you could say, boy, what a great adjustment. I would say that's a person who escaped Oz. I believe everyone has those types of things. How can you live on Earth and not have to deal with challenges? Now, some of us have more than others. But I think no one escapes it. It's all how we respond to it. And some people can look like they don't ever have any, but that's because their defenses and their ability to avoid and deny is so good. And then there's people, might I presume, like us, and probably most of the listeners, who are more they'll go into a tough situation but they'll be like Dorothy and try to want to work through it with some kind of integrity, and after a while even you know, be seekers of that, right? So I believe that no human being who lives on Earth for very long isn't going to have those kind of challenges.
Right.
Even as children we have them, but if we're fortunate enough to have healthy parents, they become our Glinda. They kind of walk us through those types of issues. They don't rescue us from those issues as up to our ability, but they kind of are there for us, and that gives us a better chance when we're adults. We build the tools earlier, and if we don't, we have to pay a therapist or read books.
That's interesting, actually, because I think you're absolutely right. Like, our parents, are there for that reason, to help us on that journey and help us, figure those things out. But I think, in our younger years, that's more relevant than perhaps our teen years, because in our teen years, for me personally, want to, sort of break free and find that independence. Sure. Because that's just a teenager sort of thing to do, find our own position and who we are. But I think our school system doesn't really teach how to deal with those things. And then we're suddenly found in the adulthood and not being able to manage them. And that's when people go through a lot of depression and struggle and pain and, really don't have the tools to deal with all that stuff.
Yep. I think that adolescence, we're pretty clear about that as a transition time leaving mom and dad. And if we have some internal tools, we're going to do that in a much more healthy way. It'll still be upheaval, because it has to be.
Yeah,
talk about Oz. Adolescence is one big Oz, right? Mm. I find it fascinating that Frank Baum's Dorothy was a teenager. She was I think she was 12 years old, and I believe it was her journey through adolescence is what it was depicting.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
Of becoming an independent person.
Mm.
And how well we do that sets the course in so many ways. But once again, the good news, of course, and the neurologists and neuropsychologists now have this term that our brain is what's the word? I lost the word.
Plasticity.
Plastic. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
The word is it means it can still change. We don't change as readily, but even as adults, we can still change, and that's why we can keep doing the journey. I have one clinical client who's in his 80s. He's still doing the journey.
Hmm. I feel, and maybe you could back me on this, but I feel a lot of these, like you're talking, the three dimensions, could be taught to teenagers at school, a lot more thoroughly as well, to help us deal with these changes that we face. Because I think we're not really taught the tools, are we?
It's interesting, isn't it? We know by the time we get out of high school, we know a lot more about math than we do about how to have a civilized disagreement, or how to ask for help, or how to be congruent with our emotions. Or lead a team, or leadership skills. So you're right. You're dead on in terms of what we teach are the easy things, like math. Although some people wouldn't say that, but
but I get it. We certainly it's sort of and maybe it's because of the people that teach us. Even our parents at that stage, are helpless. They don't know how they can help people at that age. Learn these lessons that are probably very useful.
Well, think about it. When's the last time you used calculus versus the last time you needed help having an argument with your spouse or your partner, or helping one of your kids if your kids are triggering you? That just goes to your point about what are the skills for successful living.
It's more of an internal journey than anything, isn't it? And everything like externally, like calculus, we can learn and get grips on. But if you're not internally in control or balance, it's much more challenging to do that.
Yep.
I love that story. I think it's fantastic. Follow the yellow brick road, guys. If it sounds familiar to you or interesting to you, then pick up a copy of that book. I'll stick it in the show notes. Let's get into your three dimensions. Now, you've just written this book and launched it this year, which is called The Three Dimensions of Emotions, Finding the Balance of Power, Heart, and Mindfulness in All Your Relationships. So I'm assuming those are the three dimensions, power, heart, and mindfulness.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
I changed the words a little bit to make them more digestible or identifiable. The moving against is the power. We all have a need for a sense of agency where we can have control over our life. Like Lion wanted to be king of the forest. And like I say sometimes that sometimes I want to control everybody else's forest too. And or I have no control of my own forest, and I always yield to the highest bidder, so to speak. So that dimension has to do with our ability to control things for ourselves and for those we love or identify with.
And
then the heart dimension is the moving toward dimension, the Tin Man, and then the moving away dimension. I use the term that's become very, very popular these days, and I'm so glad it is. Is the idea of mindfulness, which is a form of knowing, and that's the moving away part. That's where we can take a step back and be the observer in the calm space. Be the observer. So yes, those three are the three dimensions that I was referring to earlier in the Wizard of Oz book.
Yeah, cool. I like them. So let's talk about them, because you said also that, you know, they can have their negative and positive sort of forms, each one of those. So let's just talk about them individually, if that's okay. And I don't want to give too much away of your book, so guys, go out there and get a copy of this book, The Three Dimensions of Emotions. I'll stick the links in the show notes for you as well. But Sam, what is power? So you talk about control. What is the negative and positive sides of power?
Well, The positive is what I mentioned earlier, which is that self-confidence. It's the ability to take on challenges.
Yep.
It's being able to get what you need. So if asking my boss for a raise is going to be a power dimension venture. The negative, where you get the negative energy instead of the positive energy, is being a bully. It's being arrogant. It's all the isms, the racism, the sexism, the ageism, where we the power dimension is based on not convergence but divergence. It emphasizes how we're different. So all of the racisms. I wrote a blog article recently because as some of your audience may who are familiar with what's going on in the U.S., there's a lot of racism going on, particularly in the police force, and I was suggesting that racism is an unfortunate part of being a human being. It's wired into our brain. So that would be one of the negatives of power. So heart is obvious. Heart is caring for other people and love, and it's empathy. You were empathic earlier. It's that ability to be able to see somebody else. It's about joining. The part of us that wants to belong is all about is in that space, is in the heart space. It's the part of us that wants to join groups and be part of something. The negative part is where we defer too much. The people who suffer from depression are going to have – that's going to be a heart space issue, where we defer to other people. If you remember the three ways an organism protects itself, if you remember from biology, fight, flight, freeze, and appease.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Fight's going to be the power dimension. Flight's going to be the away dimension. And freeze and appease is the heart dimension. I always tell the story, and it's in the book, of our little dog Mona, who's about 20 pounds, and her best girlfriend across the street was about 45 pounds. And it wouldn't be uncommon to see Mona go on her back and expose her stomach to the other dog just to say, hey, I am not going to give you any trouble.
Ah, yes. You see that often, don't you? Yeah.
And that is a submissive type of thing. And sometimes that's a healthy thing. We have to know when to give up. But other times some people give up too soon, and that would be a negative part. That all codependency would be under that. And to some extent dependencies, things would become dependent when we become overly dependent.
Yeah. Right?
And then moving away, the knowing dimension, the moving away dimension, is that ability, that almost uniquely human ability to step back and look at things from the outside. It's the part of us that can regulate and control ourselves, and so that's the positive dimension. The negative dimension of that is detachment, disinterest, people who cut off their emotions, people who avoid conflict that they need to deal with. We all have stories, don't we? Of times we have to talk to someone. It's going to be a hard or scary conversation, and some people will cut off and just avoid, and that would be a negative version. And the thing that I sometimes it's not always easy. I often say, you know, if I go up, if I'm standing there and I just clobber the person right in front of me and knock them on the butt. Would that be a positive or negative power? Most of the time that would be negative. But if I'm a football player, an American football player, that would be a good hit, right?
Right.
Or if someone's going to
depends
hurt,
on the context, yeah.
If someone's going to hurt my child and I have to use force. Right, we have those kind of. I would call that a positive. But the key, I think, is the energy. What kind of energy does any of those three create? If it creates positive energy, then it's most likely a positive form of it. And if it creates heavy negative energy, it's going to be one of the other three, the negative three. If your audience is interested, I have an assessment that I have on my website, which maybe we can put up later.
Yeah,
they're welcome. It's there for free, and they can go in and take it and see how they show up in the three dimensions.
Oh, cool. Okay, so that's at the website. I'll just give that now, Sam. So the website is apc3.com. So the numeral three.
Oh, actually, it's not.
Oh.
That's my business one.
Right.
It's may I?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's power-heart-knowing.com. I'm sorry, I did it wrong. It's
mindfulness.
It's power-heart-mindfulness.com.
Uh-huh. All right, guys, so check that out. That's cool. Free little gift there from Sam. Something I'm going to try and jump onto at some stage as well. Check that out. What, Sam, with the power, heart, and mindfulness, are we sort of typically drawn towards one or swayed towards one more heavily over the other as I don't know how I'm trying to word this, but I guess from an early age, are we sort of swayed one way or the other more heavily than other people? So we're all sort of different in our balance there?
Good question. The model is meant to be a descriptive model. It's meant to be describing how we behave. But yours is a question of personality, because personality has some kind of consistency and predictability, right, over time. I may be this way one on Tuesday and completely different person than there's something wrong. We're usually consistent. So the answer to your question is mostly yes, but qualified no. Meaning, and any of us who have had kids, if you had more than one, I love asking this question to somebody. They have three kids. I go, they have all three have the same personality, right? Because they all three came from the same family, and they all three came from the same environment. And people always look at you like, no, they're three very different people.
Absolutely.
And I believe we have dispositions and or what we call in the biz temperaments that we're born with. And there are just some kids who are just a little bit more aggressive and positive, perhaps cocky. And there's other kids who are a little bit more shy and they like to live in their head more. And there's other kids who are very, very caregiving and very loving, right? So I think we are born with proclivities. But the qualifier is that I think we also can be different with different people in different contexts. Yeah. So I am more probably moving toward by nature, but when I get around my wife, I become more moving against, because she's very moving toward. And so I kind of fill in that spot. So we can be different with different people. And there's also things like I may be different with a boss because they can fire me or give me a raise than I might be with an employee. So we kind of, as much as we have temperaments, we also shift around a little bit depending on what the context is.
Yeah, absolutely, which makes sense. Interesting. These three dimensions, I mean, they're really to help us understand our behavior. Is that right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I think it's one of the things I found very valuable for it is it was such a great way to describe behavior.
Hmm.
But here's the thing, and this is a segue perhaps to something I wanted to mention from this question, but it's also a roadmap on how to get ourselves back into balance and or develop. And I call it that because the problem with is that we become out of balance. And when we come out of balance, we go into the negative parts of the dimensions. For example, one of these children, right, might be have a little more testosterone and maybe a little more aggressive, and they might become a bit too aggressive, and they might start using that to bully kids and get their way. Well. The premise of the book is this: it's not what we're doing that's negative that's important. It's what we're not doing that's positive. Let me say it again: it's not what we're doing that's negative that's important. It's what we're not doing that's positive. So, with that kind of kid who could become a bully, what he needs help with or she needs help with is not being less bully, it's being more caring, or learning how more to be more scarecrow,
right.
Which is about measuring and self-control. Scarecrow is all about controlling your feelings, as a teacher or as a parent, we're going to help that person learn more empathy. How do you think Mary felt when you said that to her, and you're starting to build empathy? Or you ask them to take the 10 count. So you start to build the other two dimensions, and then they come in the balance, and then their aggression can be used for good at that point. They could become leaders and things like that, or they can be confident in maybe in their on a sports event or something like that, or take risks and that's the whole part of the book. I go into a lot of detail about how do we bring ourselves back in the balance when we get out of balance, and all of us do.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to ask how each of them link and complement each other, which obviously they do, which makes sense if it's a triangle.
Yeah, exactly.
In the current world we live, this is just analyzing this model in my head at the moment, but I feel like humanity has really thrown this truck, because I think it relates to society as we live and how we behave as a collaborative sort of group. But I think we've sort of taken this shift towards that power and so much towards it that it's almost in a negative way. And I think now there's a shift and an awareness that we need that heart and mindfulness in our life. And I think there's that sort of observable shift going back towards, you know, more heart and mindfulness activities and practices, and certainly trying to bring that up more as well to bring balance back to that power. Because I think, and I just look at the individual going into a corporate arena, you know, we have that power, we want control, we want, that sense of freedom. So we want the better job, the more money, etc., etc. But doing that, we can actually lose connection with what it means to truly have that heart and mindfulness, and also lose connection with what it means to live life as well, I think.
Absolutely. It's interesting because of the work I do in organizational consulting, that very thing is what they're discovering, that the top-down authority piece only gets you so far, and how to bring that balance to the leadership and then to the employees. Next week, I'm going to do a workshop on developing emotional intelligence for a Fortune 100 company for that very, very reason. They want to bring that kind of balance to the culture and to the leadership.
Yeah.
And just to show you what you're talking about, my daughter, who is in her early 20s, is always correcting me around politically correct things, because that the generation that's coming up now has been very, very oriented towards inclusion, right? Where I think the cohort I grew up in was about competition and making it and who's the strongest. And this next cohort coming up, they're way more conscious about including people and not discriminating. And then this whole movement of mindfulness, the mindfulness movement, I think is also speaks to what you were saying about that correction to power, right?
Mm. For the individual listening out there, I think it's such an important conversation, and I think this triangle is really useful, because putting that mindfulness back into your life will just help you sort of reflect on, you know, maybe what's important a bit more as well, and then, you know, take that journey with a bit more ease, even though it's always going to be a struggle, I guess, but...
That's a great point, because I think that mindfulness does de-escalate, right? We can take life just too damn serious, and or it can get into that weighty place, and that mindfulness is taking a step out of the and just kind of looking at it in a neutral way, and that can lighten.
Yeah.
Is it really that important?
Yeah.
Don't sweat the small stuff.
Oh, and I like you. I mean, you had, you know, the mindfulness is knowing, but to me, sometimes knowing, people might just think, oh, that's information, you know, having that knowledge, which I think is probably more relative to power. I mean, knowledge can be used for that sort of power sense, you know, it makes you feel more confident that you know more and then therefore are more in control, whereas mindfulness is more internal sort of knowledge, isn't it? More that awareness piece.
Yeah, it's about awareness, consciousness. Those are the words in chapter. I get the chance in this book to talk about each movement in one chapter. I dedicate to each dimension.
Okay.
And so my sixth chapter is my most favorite chapter, because it's on mindfulness, and it's the words interchange with things like awareness or consciousness, stillness. Space. Those are kind of some of the ideas that go with that mindfulness, as opposed to knowledge. IQ is not EQ, as I might say.
Yeah, I like it. Mate, lovely. What do we call it? Sorry, the three dimensions, the triangle. I love it. I think it's really powerful. I think it's powerful. This conversation is powerful as well, to sort of help people just reflect inwardly in their own life and what they're doing. And you know, I guess that they're not at that point yet to sort of jump in that tornado and have that shift in location so they can actually start going through this journey. Or if they're walking there already, then, you know, just to use these as tools to better understand that journey. Just before, I want to jump into these questions, Sam, so we can wrap up the conversation. But what are have you got one or two sort of practices that we can use to help better connect with each of these three dimensions?
What would the practices be? I mean, there are very particular practices for each movement, and I go over them in the book. For example, let me give you this one, because the what makes the work of this hard is because in the moment, we automatically go to autopilot. We go whatever is we are preconditioned to do. And for some people, that's in the power dimension. So they take control. If they get threatened, they start tweeting you, so to speak. If you look at Donald Trump, whenever he gets offended, he just comes right back at you, right? And that's a very moving against tactic.
Yep.
And we do those kind of things instinctively. If we're more inclined to be in the blue, the moving away, we never talked about colors, did we? I label each of them with a color, but that's they can read about that. But if we go into the people who fall in imbalance in the heart dimension, they're automatically just going to defer to people and be super agreeable and let. So we go to these places automatically.
Yeah.
And they are what we call limbic. Limbic is the emotional part of the brain, and we learn these things. The brain encodes them. Our temperament kind of biases us, and then these things are done like reflex. I call them reactivities.
Yeah.
And we want to move from reactivity to responsibility,
right?
The ability to respond. And very often when it's happening in the moment, we can't do it. We've already in that mode. So I recommend for people, after an incident, you go, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I worked with this woman who was a powerhouse. She was a lioness, and we were working on a consulting job together. And I would go into meetings with her with my ideas about what I think's going on and what we should do. And I would always leave with her ideas about what's going on and her ideas about what we should do. And I would walk out of those meetings and go, what the heck just happened? I just kind of deferred completely to her. Mm. So recommend to people is, if that happens, go in intentional. I love the phrase conscious and intentional.
Yeah.
For things that we're not as natural at, go in conscious of that and then be intentional. For me, I had to go in and be more moving against. And I said, every time she says something, I'm going to go back to my bullet point. I'm going to do a broken record technique. So, and when I did, and I started doing that, we started to actually have a real conversation for the first time ever. So I recommend people that if you get imbalanced in the middle of something, forgive yourself, but go back next time thinking, okay, I caved in, it was too hard, I need to go in more against, or I lost my cool, I need to go in with this person, I need to be more moving away, I have to be more scarecrow.
Mm.
So that would be a good thing I'd recommend for people.
Absolutely, and you raise a good point. I'll jump into these questions, but the whole idea of our reactivity, and you say this in sort of the little brief of your book, but we often, too often, react to situations and our personal situations, and that causes more suffering than pain if we would only respond rather than always react. And, you know, obviously it's easier said than done, but yeah, as you said then, if you react and then reflect on that and sort of analyze how you could approach it better next time is certainly a way to improve. So I like that, Sam. Hey, can we jump into these other questions, Sam? You still with me?
Yep, I'm here.
Sorry. So, Sam, I've got a couple of questions to ask you, and I've just lost where they are, but here we go. Have you got any routines or rituals, Sam, that you believe contribute to your success?
Yeah, I every day, more than once a day sometimes, but certainly I try to do it at night if I don't fall asleep, but in the morning –
yeah.
I have what I would call prayerful affirmations.
Okay.
Where I will just make an affirmative statement about, you know, my health of my family, or the one that I do a lot is an affirmation around stillness, because one of my biggest issues is learning how to be more moving away, how to be more mindful. I inherited, I think, some as my grandmother would call it, agita. In Italian, yes, agita means upset, nervousness, right?
Okay.
And so I'll give affirmations about stillness and peace, right? So that I try to start days with prayer, what I call prayerful affirmations, and okay. I think that's really made a difference in the trajectory of my life.
Yeah. Okay. Great. And what advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Buy Apple stock. I almost bought Apple stock, and a friend of mine who's an investment banker told me not to do it. And boy, we laugh about it all the time now. I think for me, I could tend to be a bit of a workaholic. So I would have told my 20-year-old self, have fun more, work, get that work-life balance down earlier than later. So just to really and know that everything we do, I took a trip in my 20s to Europe and with a backpack, like some of us have done. And I don't think there's a week goes by where I don't live that experience in some form or fashion. So, you know, do life now is what I would tell him.
Do life now. Awesome. That message I love to share. So, what is your meaning of success?
This, I may have the word wrong, dharma. Uh-huh. I looked up dharma one time, and I found so many different definitions that I had the freedom to make it whatever I want. But for me, dharma means design. Who did God or the universe make me to be? And if I, to the degree I can approximate that authentically, then that's to me is success. I mentioned earlier, I think there's a part of me that's a teacher. So if I have a chance to teach then I'm being successful.
Yeah.
If I have a chance to have a few people that I really care about and I care about them well, then I'm successful. So it's doing me well is my idea of success.
Yeah, I like that definition. It's very unique. I haven't really had that precisely on the show. So yeah, certainly I like it. Cool. What have you got a piece of productivity advice that you could share with the audience about being more effective in life?
Not just the audience, but myself. And mm-hmm. If you have to do it, do it now. I find that sometimes I'll just put things aside. If you can do it now, do it now. And then you get more proficient.
Get moving on. Yeah. So looking at people out there that might be listening to the show, or anyone for that matter that is, you know, needing or wanting to make some change, what advice would you give them to start that process?
I remember having a friend who, for his 40th or 50th birthday, decided to jump out of an airplane with a parachute, mind you. And you know how you go up in these planes, and it's something that I have no interest in doing. But the thing that was fascinating to me was, he said, the instructor, I said, what did the instructor do? He says, all he said was, arch your back and jump. And I said, wow, that's how we should do life. To arch our back and jump. So when we're up against something, if we have the clarity about the change and we have some passion and conviction about it, but we can feel the resistance, because almost always we do, arch your back and jump. And as one friend says, make the parachute on the way down. So that would be my advice to if you want to make a change.
Yeah, very cool. And lots of depth in that too, actually, I could go into, but I won't. I'll resist the urge. What is your favorite food?
I'm Italian. Pasta.
Pasta. Have you got a favorite leisure activity?
I work too much. Playing the piano and singing Beatle tunes comes to my mind. Any kind of travel. I love traveling. I love being in different places. So those would be two activities.
Okay. And have you got a favorite book that you could recommend for the audience?
For fun, I love the Harry Potter series. And the book for me that's been really important lately is, it's not just the book, but it's the whole works of Eckhart Tolle.
Yeah.
particularly his The New Earth. That's an important book for me.
It's thick reading, really, isn't it? It's
very, yeah.
It's really good stuff.
Yep.
Have you got a quote or a favorite quote?
I have many, but the one that I like is if it doesn't hurt to ask. We bought our house at a very low amount of money because we found out he wanted to sell fast. So I went in and asked for what we could afford, and he gave it to us. And ever since then, I go, it doesn't hurt to ask. So yeah. There you go.
Did you buy that yourself or with an agent?
What's that?
Your house.
With ourself at first, and then we brought an agent on.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, just, I'm interested in that. It sort of works differently from where I am. What is the definition of living life with passion and purpose, or what does that mean to you?
Energy. This probably would have been another quote. Follow the energy. In fact, if I can change my answer, I would change it to that for the quote. Follow the energy. The body doesn't lie. What we know is that the body knows truth about who we are and about things way before we do. There's some fantastic experiments, which I know we don't have time to talk about, but the body doesn't lie. So follow the energy. If someone says, hey, do you want to go to happy hour? And your energy says no, then don't go. And if your energy says yes, go. The body doesn't lie. Follow the energy and that's where the passion is too.
I like it. Yes, it's fantastic. And I mean, that's negative or positive energy, isn't really. Like if it's not feeling good, then don't do it. If it feels good, then do it.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of, I mean, like intuitive messages that we can take to.
Now, granted, we can all trick ourselves, mind you, with that qualifier. Otherwise, if it's true, follow the energy. Yeah.
It's easy. So easy for the mind to trick ourselves, isn't it?
Oh.
I deal with it all the time, and it just goes, what? How do I do it?
Exactly.
But I like it. Okay, this is really cool. I love this conversation. Do you think we all have a why, Sam?
I hope so. I think there's some people who go through life unconscious. And that's probably the saddest people of all. But people, I think, who are always asking that kind of question and wondering. I'm not sure if that's what you mean, but that's how I took it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, and you hit the nail on the head, I think, is, you know, that we do all have a why, but if you go through life unconsciously, you may never get to realize that or connect with it as deeply as perhaps you could. And what did you say before? Just about, you know, dharma, you know. The meaning of success is really, you know, delving into that. Who are you and living to your potential?
Yep. The energy will tell you, it will guide you, right? Your own energy. Depending on your view of God, God will guide you or your own energy will guide you. But whatever, the energy is good.
Yeah. I like it. No, great conversation. Guys, reach out to Sam. Thank him for coming on the show. Sam, is the what's the best way to reach you? Your websites?
Probably the website's the easiest to remember. If you Google Sam Ali Brando, you're likely to get my cousin, whose name's Sam Ali Brando, and he's also an author. He's written a book on creationism, and I haven't, and I'm better looking than him. probably if people can remember the www, the power-heart-mindfulness.com, or if you can get past my cousin, there's not too many Sam Alibrandos other than my cousin and I.
Yeah, I think I found you pretty easy. I Google searched you and found your page pretty much at the top there without stumbling across your cousin, as far as I'm aware, unless I think I'm talking to the different person.
Wrong person, yeah.
But no, cool, Sam. Look, I'll stick all those links in the show notes anyway, guys. So if you're out and about right now and don't have the capacity to remember that, the links will be in the show notes. And also the links to the books too, Sam. So guys, pick up a copy of those books. They certainly sound like an interesting read. I love this these three dimensions. I think they're powerful and certainly could be useful in helping us assess our behaviors better and really using that then to direct our life in a more meaningful direction. So, Sam, thank you for taking the time out and coming on the show.
It was my pleasure. It was very fun talking with you. I can sense your energy and your depth, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, likewise, mate. I've loved it. So what a way to start my day. It's quite early here. I know it's sort of middle of the day for you, but I do like waking up and starting the day with such great thoughts. Appreciate that, guys. Make sure you check out the show notes. Jump onto thehiddenwhy.com. Reach out to Sam. Thank him for coming on the show. And until next time, peace, passion, and purpose.
Thanks for listening to the Hidden Why podcast, where it's all about living life with passion. For all the latest news and updates, please subscribe online to thehiddenwhy.com.
There you have it, guys. What an incredible discussion. Hope you got something out of that. Let me know what you think. Again, thehiddenwhy.com. You can leave your comments and thoughts at this episode there, 224 Sam Alibrando. Guys, that's it from me. Just a reminder and a couple of things before I let you go. Number one is that we are sponsored by Global Office Assistance. It's a great outsourcing company, solution, to outsource a lot of those tasks and bits and pieces that you have to do that just take up a lot of your time. It allows you to focus on some more important things, some bigger picture tasks, etc. So if you've got like a database that needs managing, or you want someone to manage your emails or search for contacts or whatever it might be, I mean, the list is endless, really, what you can get these guys to do. They're based in the Philippines, got a high work ethic, and do a really good job. You can teach them pretty much anything that you want, as long as it's done online, and then they can get to work for you. Very affordable rates, that's the best part of it. So you don't have to go out there and do a contract and, you know, deal with all that workplace stuff that you have to deal with. I don't know anything about that sort of stuff. But these guys, it's just straightforward. You just get a VA, you hire them, a virtual assistant, and then they start working for you, pay month by month, and you know, it's just a great way to get more things done. So check them out at globaloffice assistance.com. I certainly use a few to do bits and pieces for my tasks as well, the Hidden Why and other stuff as well. So check them out. Also, guys, if you haven't been able to yet and would like to, maybe if you get a moment later today, jump onto iTunes and leave us a review at the podcast. Just stars 1 to 5, whatever you feel is the worthy rating of this show, and leave me a little comment there. That'd really help. It helps amp up our rankings and reach more people as well at The Hidden Why. Other than that, guys, I don't think I have really much more to say. I probably could keep on talking, but I'm going to leave you with it. You know what to do. You need to breathe more passion into every part of your life. You need to discover more purpose in every single moment, and in doing that, discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why. My name's Liam Arnutzi, signing out.
Thanks for listening to The Hidden Why podcast, where it's all about living life with passion. For all the latest news and updates, please subscribe online, thehiddenwhy.com. This is The Hidden Why.
Are you ready to discover your hidden why, to discover your life's purpose? Then jump onto thehiddenwhy.com and download my free discovery questionnaire. It's designed to help you connect with what's truly important in your life, and in doing so, create more freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. This is the discovery questionnaire. You can download it at thehiddenwhy.com under the resources tab. Discover your hidden why.